RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
You may remember back to a little more than a month ago, we were speaking to Stephen Brown, Springbank Honey Director, on being ordered to burn 10,000 bee boxes worth $2 million, he said, after two positive swabs for American fowl brood, which is caused by the spore-forming bacterium Pinna bacillus larvae. It's been in the country since 1880. And he wasn't a happy camper, it would be fair to say, when we spoke to him back then. Then we talked with Jane Lorimer, President of New Zealand Beekeeping, and Dwayne Hill, Northern Operations Manager of AFB Management Agency, the regulator by proxy. We thought we would get another perspective on the AFB controversy, so we have invited Rachel Stott, hobbyist beekeeper on, and open-minded critical thinker. She believes it's essential to register our hives and have them inspected annually for AFB, American fowl brood. She has her DECA, I think that stands for Disease Elimination Conformity Agreement, and has also been audited and found it helpful. She has four hives in her backyard. She started her beekeeping journey with a course from Otago Polytech. Being registered means beekeepers are notified of AFB cases in their immediate area. She joins us now. Rachel, thanks for coming on RCR.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
What got you interested in bees?
Well, I'm a gardener, so I think it's like a natural kind of fascination with what pollinates my crops.
Right. And so you are supportive of the regime that hunts down, tests for, and tries to eliminate AFB. How dangerous is it to beehives?
Devastating. The cells, basically, they turn into mush, and you lose all your brood. And because bees aren't fixed, like your dog in your backyard or horse in the paddock, it spreads potentially to everyone else's bees as well.
Yeah. So it spreads from other bees, and hence that's probably why Stephen Brown was sort of grumpy, because he thought that competitive beekeepers or beehives in his area had sort of dobbed him in. It's always a risk, I suppose. I mean, I don't want to get into that, but, you know, it's a business after all in the end. Though, are you a business or is it more of a hobby? It's a hobby, right?
No, I'm a hobbyist.
Yeah. Okay, and you sort of buy into the management of it. You think it's okay?
I've finally had good experiences, and I know the reason for it. I think, I've been audited and found the woman who audited me really helpful and really chatty, gave me great advice. It was really interesting what she was doing. Like, she wasn't just checking for AFB, she was checking for other potential diseases. And I think kind of being open to those kind of people visiting, then if you're defensive of them visiting, then they're going to think you've got something to hide, which right. I have nothing to hide.
Yeah. Was the person who came and audited you a beekeeper in your area or from out of town?
About an hour down the road.
There is a difference, though, between a hobbyist and a commercial operation, though, isn't there? Just saying.
Oh, definitely there is. But considering that there are so many beekeepers in New Zealand, I mean, I guess you're going to get some angst between different people just because of different personalities. Yeah. I mean, I don't know Stephen's situation with his neighbours or neighbouring beekeepers. I have no idea. And I guess there's a potential for people to be sour grapes.
Okay, so let's get into some useful information. How do you keep hives healthy when you've got AFB out there, varroa mite as well, and I guess other things? How do you go about that? Practical information here.
When you check your hives, you are looking at the general health of your hives, like if they seem like, say, with varroa, you might get parasitic mite syndrome with deformed wings on the bees. You know, you've got an issue with that. You might see bees outside your hives walking on the ground with deformed wings. And then, you know, you've got your pass when you should have treated for varroa. If you open up your hives, you've got strange-looking cells, like something out of the ordinary in your brood box, then you need to have a good look at that. If you're unsure, you need to ask someone else. With varroa, you need to treat regularly. So several times a year, what you would need to put treatment on. They really don't like the organic treatment because it stinks. But
you mean the bees?
The bees hate the organic treatments. So, and they kill a lot of bees. So if you're using formic acid, you'll see like a lot of dead ones outside the hives a few days after you use it. The non-organic stuff doesn't smell and they walk all over it, but it's not very nice stuff. So it's, but you have to do something or else you'll lose your hives, basically. They'll just, they'll get overrun by varroa mites and that's it.
Right. Okay. Well, that's not a very nice thing, I suppose. Do they get over it or is it going to kill them every time, AFB?
AFB, it will kill them. Like, I've never had that myself. I've only seen photos online. It's basically the cells in the brood box turn into a gloopy mess and foul smelling. And so if you've got that, and you can rope out some of your cells, then you know you've got trouble. You're actually legally required to kill your bees with petrol, seal it up, kill it with petrol. Then you've got a few days to burn. I think it's five days to burn your hives. You'll get an extension if there's fire restrictions. But yeah. I mean, that's every beekeeper's worst nightmare.
Yeah. Do you become attached to your bees?
You do. Definitely do. They're quite fascinating to sit there and watch, coming and going from the hives.
Explain that. What are they? I mean, they always seem to be busy and active, busy as bees, right? Busy bees.
Yeah.
I mean, they're basically a laid out kind of colony, aren't they? They sort of work thousands of them and they sort of build their system and operate it. Is that how it works?
Yeah, basically. One hive is one creature as such. It's like they all work collectively for the well-being of their hives. And it's like, yeah, you need the queen there because or else your hive will fail. But the workers run the hive, and they're amazing. Like, they've all got different roles, and depending on the ages, they have the roles changes.
The roles change. Okay.
They do. Some of them clean up the hive. Some of them will be away foraging. Some of them will be nurse bees. Some of them will be feeding the queen. A lot of disease in the hives is due to the genetics of the queen. So if you have a lot of varroa, then it might be because the queen has poor genetics. I'm unsure about AFB, like if that comes in there. But just like the mood of the hive is determined by the queen. If you've got a grumpy queen, you've got a grumpy hive. We've had a hive where they were coming out and trying to sting my husband with a lawnmower. It's like some are just crazy.
Okay. So like doing sort of like fighter style attacks on him while he's mowing the lawn.
Yeah. And the lawnmower, it was just like we requeened because they were nuts.
For those tending the queen, is that the highest rank in the hive before the queen, is it? I'm just trying to get an idea of how it all falls together. Are they like, you know, we know about the human queen. They have all their ladies in waiting and footmen and all of that. I guess they're the equivalent in the bee world, are they?
Well, the queen has no equipment to feed herself. So if she has no attendants, then she will die. They have to feed her. And also the drones, they need feeding too. I mean, they don't contribute to foraging. They're there for breeding.
Right. How far do bees range, the foraging bees? How far do they actually go?
Up to 5K.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, that's like an aeroplane flying somewhere because they're tiny.
Yes, exactly.
Well, you think they get a bit tired out doing all that.
Yeah, they're amazing. And then in winter they form a cluster. But then on nice days you'll see them quite active around the entrance. They need above 10 degrees to go out and forage.
Right. What about, the other beehives around? They know which hive they're from. How do they get on with other hives?
Well, they usually just, outside of like robbing season, they usually just leave the other hives alone. But during autumn when they're gearing up for winter, they start seeing if they can rob out other hives. And so therefore, if you've got hives in your vicinity that have had all the honey removed from them, then they might come looking for your bees to rob out. And that can be a concern for disease as well as them losing their honey. I had one incident where I had to take measures to prevent them being robbed out, but it's only once.
Okay, so it's every hive for itself in the end.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. And the queen never flies, right?
She does.
Oh, she does.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. She, a virgin queen will leave the hive once to mate, and she'll then have enough fertilised eggs to last her lifetime.
Okay. Boy, I'm learning something here. How many bees would the queen, give birth to or lay eggs for? I don't know what the term is. How many? Thousands, I suppose, is it?
Yes. But typically, a queen can live for 5 years, but typically the hive needs to be requeened every year.
What is the lifespan of the average bee?
42 days.
Is that all?
I don't name them.
Yeah, fair enough. I guess, though, in bee time, it's probably, feels like a lifetime.
It would do.
Yeah. Okay, so what other things do you have to do? There's antibiotics, right? Do you use antibiotics for any of... No? Okay.
No. In New Zealand, we don't use antibiotics on beehives. They do in the US to control AFB. And personally, I think with antibiotic resistance, we need to be really careful.
Yeah.
Because if we start using antibiotics in beehives, like it's like a slippery slope. And I mean, there's concern about that being used in farm animals. So, I mean, it just doesn't seem right to use it in a beehive. And I think for our export industry, that would be pretty devastating.
Hmm.
So that's the other option. I mean, if AFB does get, it gets really prevalent, then I guess they'll be looking at what we can do.
And you mentioned robbing before. Is that for food, is it? Robbing other hives for food?
Yes.
Oh, I suppose that's fair enough if you're running low on food.
Yeah, well, you've actually got to leave enough honey on your hives to keep them for winter or else they can starve. Like a friend said, her hive has starved to death one winter, so that would be pretty devastating. And last winter I had to feed two hives, which was a bit of a nuisance. It's not something I want to do, and it was because one was a late swarm and it didn't have time to fill up its super. Another one nearly got knocked out by varroa, so that was pretty sad as well.
What does varroa do to the bees?
It's like having a human having the equivalent of a baseball under their ribs, sucking out the fat, basically.
Mm.
it weakens them. It gets shaken off the bees into the cells before they get capped. So then you'll get varroa on the larvae and then parasitic mite syndrome, like with the deformed wings. And it makes them really weak. So if you've got quite a strong hive, you can have varroa right over them and in a really sickly kind of hive. And I know some people are like, well, actually, you know, we shouldn't have sick bees in that. But we've got a world like with high, like radio waves, Wi-Fi, and, you know, like cell phone technology. We don't know, like, obviously, we don't know how detrimental that is to bees. Like, we've got a lot of chemicals that we don't know how that affects bees. And so, therefore, they get these diseases. And we don't know if that's a consequence of anything else or just one of those things.
Do you suspect that there's a connection there, some sort of issue there with electromagnetic fields and, well, I guess, insects broadly, but particularly bees, from any of your observations?
I did notice on my course that someone kept getting stung a lot and, like, I don't know whether it was because he had a cell phone on him or anything, or whether they just took exception to what he'd had for breakfast. I don't know. But there is some sort of anecdotal evidence to say that that cell phones are things that bees don't like.
Yeah. The varroa mite, isn't it? It's a mite. Does it just sort of like stick to the bee while the bee's doing its kind of activities? Is that how it gets into the hive?
Yeah, basically they pick it up while they're foraging. Like, the varroa mite would sit on a flower that it would drop off another bee, and it could be from their own hive or another hive. It's apparently it was beekeepers who inadvertently spread varroa when it arrived in New Zealand in the late 90s, and it's just, before that there were wild bees in New Zealand, like, that just, like, were in tree trunks and things like that. But now, like, typically they'll be wiped out in one season.
I think going back to talking about Stephen Brown, when we spoke to him, he was furious about having to burn his bee boxes. And after hearing you talk, I can imagine how that could be traumatic. You must know people who've had to do that. What's the experience like?
Oh, so devastating for these beekeepers that they didn't want to be beekeepers anymore.
Okay, yeah.
And I would definitely burn my hives if I was required to, if they had AFB. But, I mean, we can only hope that will never happen. I mean, just inspecting them, I mean, I have to do an inspection every spring and before I remove honey from the hives. But, you know, like, just good beekeeping practices to have check them regularly and make sure that they're nice and healthy. That's in my best interest for that to be the case.
Out of four hives, how much honey can you extract? It's a hobby. So, what, it's for yourself or you're selling any? I'm just curious about the quantity you get from that.
We got three supers of one hive and very little off the other three this year. Just the season, it just depends on, like, how much food there is around and the weather conditions. I would have to extract my honey in a commercial kitchen to be able to sell it. So right. It's like giving it away to family and friends.
Do you like honey? Everyone likes honey, right?
Yeah, I like honey. It's, yeah, in moderation, it's great.
Yeah,
and it's an interesting process, like how they do it and keeping an eye on things, and yeah.
And they create it for. Sorry to sound so ignorant, but I've never really had to think about this before in my life, really, apart from knowing that bees fly around and every now and then they sting you, and that. Some of them are remarkable flyers considering their body size and the size of their wings. I know that. But they create the honey to feed themselves. That's what it's there for, right?
Yeah, exactly.
How do they do it, Rachel? How do they do it? I know another elementary question, but they obviously build this chemical formulation that is honey.
They take nectar from flowers, and they go back. They suck up the nectar into their stomach, and then when they get back to the hives, they regurgitate it. It's very wet at that stage, so they fan their wings and fan off the excess moisture. When it's to their liking, they cap the honey. And so there's no point extracting uncapped honey because it'll be too wet and ferment.
They know when it's good to go.
Yeah, they're amazing. It's just incredible that they've got these processes. I mean, it's everything about bees is really incredible, apart from getting stung.
Yeah, well, they've got that as their defense, I suppose.
They do.
And they must suck cumulatively, a lot of nectar out of the plant world, like masses of nectar, quantity-wise.
Oh, most definitely. But like each individual bee, I think it's only something like 1/12 of a teaspoon or something. It's something really tiny.
Per load.
I think it's something per bee in their lifetime. It's something insanely small.
Okay, gee.
So yeah. it takes a lot for them to fill a cell.
So what is the population of the average hive?
Like a hive in midsummer, like during the honey flow, it's something like 50,000, I think, something like that.
Because imagine trying to manage all that.
It's amazing. Like they're like such a fine-tuned machine. It's incredible, and like you lift off the like the hood as such, and you have a look, and it's just like you've got this really focused, busy thing happening inside your hives. And actually, when you're in your hives, you can't think about anything else because you know that you need to focus, and you just focus on that.
It's like operating a small city, really, isn't it?
It is. It's incredible.
Nature, eh? Nature. What about people who abandon hives? That's a risk, isn't it?
It is most definitely a risk. Like, if you think, well, a bee, if I put honey on my windowsill, my bees will smell it and I'll have, like, every hive wanting to come in inside to get that honey on my windowsill. I wouldn't do it. If you think you've got an abandoned hive and you're anywhere near other hives, they're going to sniff out any honey in their hives and they're very attracted to it.
Well, it's been really interesting chatting with you, Rachel. I've learned a lot.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
And all the best for what you do, for your hobby.
Thank you.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.